said he was going to go get coffee, but he's still here, unfortunately. And we can
see I have plenty of coffee.
Oh, okay. And as you can see, we are joined by... we're joined by Teo... oh, there's Sean! We're joined by the Misdirected Mark folks today. We're joined by Teo's... not Misdirected Mark. Mastering Dungeons on a Misdirected Mark network. Teo's and Sean, our dear friends. How are you guys doing? Yeah.
Doing great. Fantastic. Over to you, Sean.
I let Teo speak for me because I have no idea how I'm doing. So if Teo says I'm doing fine, then I feel better.
Well, based on listening to your podcast, I understand.
Yes.
Everyone make sure to go check out our friends on a Misdirected Mark network and the Mastering Dungeons podcast. So, you know, the way we normally do the show is we usually start out, we talk a little bit about the gaming we did this week, a little bit of news, and then we dive into an adventure writing session with our guests. What we're going to do is we're going to truncate that first bit, and we're going to spend a lot of time working on an adventure with our guests and with the chat. You know, we figured let's do something special for Gen Con, and we have these two amazing writers with us, so let's take advantage of it.
Right?
Yeah.
Right. Also... We're here at Gen Con, and we are a news show, so I just want to talk Gen Con a little bit before we get started with that. Is that cool? oh my gosh. Let's see. So Gen Con this time had three different ways to participate, which in person, which of course, here we are in our homes, online, and also the pop-ups. So I'm curious how your Gen Con experience has been so far this weekend.
I've watched a little bit today and I watched a little bit yesterday, but not a whole lot. Just it's been a busy weekend. I'm hoping to catch some of the VODs later if they're available, that type of stuff. But how about you, Teo, Sean?
I somehow managed to perfectly thread the needle between work that I had on the weekends and playing a game of Numenera, a game of Call of Cthulhu, and like two seminars that I attended, the 13th Age Make a Monster, and then the Saving Throw Show. Dom was telling us tips about how to stream. That was awesome.
That's awesome.
Wow.
Oh, we got another follower. Woo!
Oh, nice. Yeah. I'm glad we've got online gaming down. I wanted to go play some Gen Con games, and my weekend's been totally wild. So, mm-hmm. I'm just excited to be doing it.
So what was this? What was the 13th Age Designing Monsters panel like?
Yeah.
Yeah, like just in general.
It's you would like it because it's, and folks who are watching this would like it because it's a lot like this design and adventure thing. They start with a wacky concept, and that usually it's done at Gen Con, and people throw out ideas. And so it actually, I started it off because I put in the idea, either too many bones or too few. And it led to this crazy idea of a creature that lives in the plane of Echo and has a reflection, and so it can, and it steals bones from bards. It was wild. And so they came up with all these different things as they designed the monster. It was great. And I mean, you have the minds of all kinds of twisted 13th Age guys that are there, you know, Rob Hainsu and all the team that works on monster books. So they were just going to it. It was great.
That's awesome. Yeah, no, I love Rob. Rob is hilarious.
I love steals bones from bards. Like that specific. Yeah. I track all the bards down. Just take all their bones. Okay.
That was my nickname in college.
Oh, yeah.
You stole all the bards' bones?
Apparently.
Oh, well, I mean, you know, my nickname was...
I don't remember any of it, but that's what they were calling me the next day. So.
Oh, that makes sense. That was my college experience, too. Not remembering any of it.
Exactly.
Rich,
I'm only now starting to understand the innuendo, and it's hurting.
In your end. Rich, I heard you went to a Gen Con pop-up. What was that like?
I did. Yeah, I was really excited that they were sending stuff out for game stores to demo. And so I went down to the, you know, friendly local gaming store and played a couple different games, which was great. I lost a Splendor tournament, so there's Gen Con. It really felt real right there.
Yeah.
You know, we had about 20 people down here playing different games. I played one about decorating a dungeon, kind of drafting tiles, and it's pretty fun. We were trying to, you know, battle for vocal space against our local like Warhammer gamers who were also in the same room. So it felt like it was as close to the experience as you could want.
Warhammer gamers have a presence. Both, yeah, they have a presence audibly, and yeah, it's great. Yeah. I love Warhammer. I wish I played more of it.
But it was great because people would, like, they registered for $5 and they got a lanyard and they got the little, you know, didn't have their name on it, but a little Gen Con badge kind of.
Oh, nice.
You know, so you'd look around and see all that. It just, it had enough flavor that mm-hmm. you could imagine. Yeah. Okay. Gen Con satellite.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And that was like, it's a good first step. Yeah. It's a good first step for people too, who may have never had the opportunity to go to Gen Con to at least, mm-hmm. you know, feel a part of it. So as horrible as this pandemic has been on so many levels, mm-hmm. This need to change the way you do things in order to expand and in order to entertain has been helpful to some.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah, we a little while ago, we had the Brian Patterson, D20 Monkey, on the show, and we did a lot of talk about, like, mental health and during the pandemic and stuff like that. And I think having these pop-ups, so long as people are staying safe, right, mm-hmm. and washing their hands and wearing their masks, I think this is something we all kind of need. Like, we all need mm-hmm. some human contact. And so I'm really appreciative that those things are happening. I haven't gotten to check it out myself.
Yeah. One of the things that I wish I could have been in on at Gen Con this year was the final adventures coming out for the Moonshae Isles campaign that Bald Man Games has done over the last 2, 3, 4 years.
Yeah.
So there have been at least, you know, 20 trilogies of adventures, I think, mm-hmm. or 19 or 20 trilogies of adventures that they put out over the years. And that's a huge amount of work. Teos can tell you, you know, Ashes of Athas putting out, you know,
I mean, you know better than I do. You've done this several times. I only dealt with it once, but I know that feeling of wrapping up a campaign is a really bittersweet feeling. And it was fun to see those tweets from Eric Menge talking about that. It was great.
Yeah, I mean, Eric is an incredible storyteller, and he's put together a great team writing all these adventures. So, if you don't know what they are, you know, Moonshae Isles is a big part of the Forgotten Realms. The first Forgotten Realms novel was set in the Moonshae Isles, so you know it's got a place in nostalgia, and it's also a great place to set adventures because it's got all the themes that you want. You got your fae side of things. You've got giants. You've got you know, twisted magic and druids and all, you know, all of that, all those great tropes are there. And Eric is a huge fan of those novels, so he really took everything he could from those novels to put them into the adventures. So you know, even if you're not a fan of those novels specifically, they're still fun to play. But if you are, all the Easter eggs are there.
That's awesome. Yeah, I got to play. I haven't played nearly as much Adventures League as I've wanted to this year, but I've played a few in the Moonshae Isles adventures since they've been in here over the past. Well, you said it was like 3 years now, right? They've been in Moonshae Isles.
Yeah.
It's really good. It's a lot of fun. It's a region I haven't explored much in Forgotten Realms, so I love digging into new places.
Right. But,
yeah, cool. What else you got, Rich?
Ooh. Let's see. One of the things that I always think about as kind of a highlight of Gen Con, because I watch it from afar. I've only been to Gen Con one time. It's not, you know, I'm a West Coaster, but I love the Annies. I just think it's a fun moment. I know if there have been Annies deals in the past and whatever else, but it's kind of like a moment when people do tend to come together and talk about what is interesting this year. So I do like it. It's my awards show. Mm-hmm. And I was really interested that the big winner this year from Renegade Games, getting Product of the Year, Best Game, and Best Rules, was Alice is Missing. Have either of you, has anyone gotten the chance to play that one yet?
I almost signed up for one, but I wasn't sure if the experience playing online would be weird to not be saying things in a game.
Yeah.
But maybe it would have even been more appropriate. Right. But at the last minute, I was like, I don't know. Maybe I'll try it in person. So I have not.
I've not tried it. I've heard amazing reviews. It looks really interesting. I need to try it. I need to get together with some folks because I think I'm with you, Teos. Like it does feel like there's a certain aspect of it. You need the body language that's missing a little bit in the online
Yeah, because you don't talk during this game, right? Is the idea?
Yeah. Yeah. Which I can't believe that's a product of the year, is one where you're not talking.
Yeah.
You know, you're communicating by text or whatever else. It's just.
Yeah.
Well, everybody really liked that movie. What is it? Don't speak. Don't make a noise. You know, that horror movie.
Oh, sure.
It's one I haven't seen yet, but yeah.
No. Yeah, but I'm really glad that we've got something so interesting and so kind of different than the D20 kind of moment that got called out right there. It was very fun. We talked to Eugene Marshall of Arcanist Press recently, who wrote Ancestry and Culture, and that got a couple silvers for best supplement and best electronic book. So I was pretty excited to see that. We talked to him a lot about kind of like the change towards dealing with race and ancestry in D&D in general. So that was very cool.
Speak of the devil.
There's Eugene right there. Congratulations. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Yeah, we had him on to talk about the book that I believe won. Ancestries and...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ancestry and Culture, absolutely.
Yeah.
And that entire line of products, very cool.
Yeah.
Let's see, fan favorite publisher. And I think the folks who got the most awards overall was Free League Publishing for Alien and Nordic Horror.
Okay.
And my big surprise one, and yeah, sorry.
that's impressive. I think, and one of my favorite things of the Annies, where I kind of agree with you that the Annies can be really great, is they can introduce people to new publishers, right? And help them elevate a bit. So like Pelgrane Press a few years ago, or many years ago, sort of won a bunch. And a lot of people didn't understand Pelgrane Press back then. And so that's sort of like, oh, okay, I need to take them seriously. And same thing with Free League. I think a lot of people know about them, but now it's like another level of establishing. When you just sweep a bunch of awards, it kind of settles that they know what they're doing, right? They're making good stuff.
Right.
Yeah,
something's going right over there. I should check that out.
One of the things that I really enjoyed about the Ennies this year was the fact that like the big publishers didn't really toss anything in the ring. It gave a chance for a lot of the more indie developers, the smaller developers, like you were saying, Teos, to get that recognition that will hopefully catapult them into, you know, everyone's mind, like Renegade Games. You know, they were a winner,
right?
Five, six years ago. Yeah. So.
Oh my gosh. My biggest surprise from the Ennies.
Biggest surprise. I'm ready.
Winning four awards, Brancalonia Spaghetti Fantasy, an Italian Kickstarter that launched or finished up in August, I think, very recent. They got about 100,000 and they four awards, both gold and silver for this product that I had just barely heard of. And I'm kind of excited because that's also, I think, one of the first major like Italian you know, times they've been in the awards at all, you know, I'm just, it's kind of cool to see that international audience come in and just run through.
It's like a soccer match, right? We have Italy versus Sweden. Right? I mean, it's
right.
Teos, have you visited any gaming stores in Italy? I know.
I have, though I tend to go to the smaller towns when I'm there, like, you know, little Tuscan towns. And so they don't have much of anything, but next time I visit, it's on my list to grab a copy of everything in Italian that 5e has, cause they do have those.
Oh yeah.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. But you know, it's neat to go to any store in Europe. Has its own slight differences that you kind of go, oh yeah, that's different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Last time I went there, I was super into comics. That was my entire life. And so I went to a bunch of different comic stores and got, you know, they just have different comics there. You know, we know about heavy metal, of course, over here in the States, but they have a bunch of them like that. And then a bunch of comics are just formatted in these like different shapes than what you expect. And I have a bunch of those laying around somewhere. It was a great experience checking out how your hobby translates in Europe, in the European market.
And they've introduced a new convention, or I don't know if it's a new convention, but Wizards has put its power behind in a convention called Lucca in Italy recently. And so they've traveled there, they've been running special events there, and obviously COVID slowed everything down, but it'll be interesting to see if they continue that relationship.
Yeah, so Lucca. So we're gonna do this panel at Lucca next year.
Yeah,
it's one of the biggest conventions in the world, that Luca convention. It's apparently enormous.
Right.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
It's one of those things that you count it a certain way, and then it's like the biggest, but I don't recall what the categorization is, but it's enormous either way you look at it.
Oh, that's amazing.
Oh, wow.
I'm definitely looking forward to going to some conventions again soon. It's, not super soon, but soonish, right? Like, I don't want to go this weekend,
right.
Because I have plans, but, you know, maybe next weekend. I don't know.
Yeah. Soon enough. Well, very cool. Man. I think that's, for me, that was, those were the things I was looking at for the Ennies in particular. I don't know if anyone else had any big winners that they were really excited to see.
Yeah, I already mentioned that I didn't see the big ones, but I also didn't see a lot of organized play showing up again this year. So I'm wondering if there just wasn't very much submitted, or if they've done away with the category, which I know Teos fought for years.
So
Teos has a story.
I'll try to make it very brief. So I fought for this organized play category because back then the production values of organized play adventures were such that I was told by Ennies people, you can't win. Like if you don't have decent layout and cover and things like that, like if it looks like a Word document, you can't win. It's just not possible. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter how good the adventure is, you won't win. So I was like, well, what if we created a category just for organized play adventures? And we've got, you know, Shadowrun Missions, and we've got all these other ones, and Legend of the Five Rings, and all these things that existed back then. And a number of things have happened since then as they slowly added this category. One was that various organized play programs went away, mm-hmm. or were not in a place where they could submit because they were too busy. And production values went up to the point where I don't know that we actually need the category necessarily. And if we did, we'd want folks... It's almost like the Ennies isn't suited to do it. Like they can't properly review it to really assess what is a good organized play thing. Mm-hmm. And I guess, you know, votes change, or the judges change each year. So it's to the point where this year they named content programs instead of organized play programs in addition to AL. So it was essentially like the version of the DM's Guild for Call of Cthulhu got added. Wow. Yeah. And it's not organized play at all. And it won gold and silver for those adventures. They're not organized play adventures. And it was even funny that I'm on the Call of Cthulhu mailing list and getting their email that explained, like, believe it or not, we're on the organized play category. We don't know why. Here's how to find us. So it's one of those things that, like, because if it's a content program, then all of DM's Guild should be in that category, right?
Right. So right. But it's in just best electronic book. Yeah.
Quite. Interesting. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, wow. I have learned a bit. Yeah, and Eugene Marshall in the chat said they had an organized play category still this year. Both silver and gold were at Call of Cthulhu. So mirroring exactly what you said.
So those are those content provision programs rather than organized play programs. So I don't know. It's
interesting. Wild. Yeah, if you are checking right now, the Ennies site was down for me all day. So you'll have to find that news somewhere else. I think there is a recap on EN World, of course. Which is strangely up.
It is strange that Ian World's up.
Well, if Ennies is down, then I don't.
I didn't hack it to change the organized play program. No.
No.
Cool.
So well, something's happening.
Yeah.
Something is happening next week on Thursday. In fact, I believe Thursday is when it's happening. It's super exciting, and everybody here should be super excited about it. It is, in fact, my birthday. And so everyone should come. Yeah, it's my birthday Thursday. That's it. That's all that's going on starting September 23rd, right? Nobody else.
I'm writing it on my calendar.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I get that once yearly message that, happy 65th birthday, which I think I missed both of you this year. I apologize. It's been a weird year. That is going to be D&D Celebration. It is the 23rd through 26th. And Rich, you wrote down there's going to be a musical?
Yeah, absolutely. So this is D&D Celebration this year is focused on, I believe, the Wild Beyond the Witchlight, although there's a lot of Fizban's Treasury of Dragons that's going to be chatted about as well, it looks like, since this book comes out on the 21st, kind of as a lead up. And then, yes, holy cow, there's so many things going on. And the one I keep seeing on Twitter is the Circus of Sound, a D&D musical, with a with a whole bunch of folks. I have no idea what it's going to be about. None, except you know, Circus, A Wild Beyond the Witchlight.
Yeah.
I was always sad that I never got to go see the Pathfinder plays that kept happening up in, I think it was in Washington. It might've been in Oregon, where like folks who were writing for Pathfinder would, or they were going to create one of their adventures live on stage. It sounded amazing. I wanted to go. I'm going to check out this musical just because I want that sense of the theatric, you know, I want to see it. And find out how in the world that looks. I don't know. That should be fun.
Yeah. Do you guys, do you guys have any celebration plans? I know you've been involved before, Teos, and
I'm playing some games. Yeah. So, you know, there's a whole organized play component that's behind that. So if you go to that D&D celebration page, there's a whole play area, and there's still some seats available for some events. A lot of it is sold out, but they've got the Wild Beyond the Witchlight preview for the new AL season that'll start up, mirroring that book. And they've got, you know, Ravenloft stuff, though I think those are all sold out because it's mostly the Witchlight stuff. So if you're trying to get other things, I think those are pretty hard to get. I think there's some Moonshades or Red Wizards adventures as well, but again, all sold out. So, but the Witchlight, you can still get the preview. And I'm doing that and something else.
Have you guys?
There's two Witchlight adventures. The first is a 2-hour prelude adventure, which I think includes character creation.
Okay.
Yeah. If you want to create characters that way. And then there's a 4-hour multi-table epic adventure called the Witchlight Carnival that actually kicks off the season and the campaign. So if you're, you know, into Adventures League or don't know what Adventures League is and want to check it out, those are your two events right there.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. And the 5e intro adventures, at least, you know, whenever I started, were fantastic. And I've heard those intro adventures continue to be fantastic. So for new players, definitely go check those out. Witchlight, you know, have you guys gotten a chance to look at it, talk about it?
You know, Wizards always sends us copies, but they always get lost. So they're just, you know,
yeah,
not yet.
I wasn't sure how much swagger you guys had. So
I'm sure we're on their list. I'm sure. Yeah. So it's just, you know, but yeah.
Well, I mean, yeah,
we are on a list. Yeah. We don't know which list that is.
It's like an FBI list is what it is.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, I'm sure you guys will be talking about it soon on your podcast over at the Misdirected Mark Network. And we'll be talking about it next Sunday right here on the Saving Throw Network. So we'll have to compare notes sometimes.
I mean,
in maybe 2 or 3 weeks, we're going to have Will Doyle and Stacey Allen, who did most of the writing on the adventure, on our show.
Oh, that's awesome.
So there.
Yeah, that's great.
It's going to be a while, but we'll get there.
Yeah, that's great. I will have to check that out.
I'm really excited to take a look at an adventure where the combatless path is possible. Just to see what in the world that means. Cause I know there's been a couple, you know, some talking about it, but I just want to see it and read through the whole thing. I'm really excited.
Yeah. I'm very excited.
Will and Stacy are amazing creators. And they do create outside the box. So if you've played any of Will's or Stacy's adventures, you know that it's not going to be the typical kick down the door, kill the monster, go to the next room, kill the monster, go to the next room, kill the monster, fight the boss, you're done. That's not how they roll. And so it's always great to see what they can come up with. And there's always amazing twists and turns and different ways to come at encounters. So I'm just looking forward to seeing what they've come up with.
Yeah,
I've been so impressed by their design and particularly relevant to this, the non-combat design they've come up with, where it's like it almost plays like a party game at times with some of the design that they've done. And just really fun twists and turns that catch you in a neat role-playing way. You're like, oh, that's what's going to happen now. And then you've got to handle that. And it's very engaging. So
that's awesome.
I'm excited to see what they did with that.
Also rabbit folk. I mean, come on.
Hair and gone.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Is it confirmed that they are demons? That was the rumor I saw on Reddit is that they're Haragon, so the Gon ending makes them a demon.
I just want to see someone.
If they turn into a demon, they're a Haragon gone.
Oh.
Wow.
I'd miss D&D nerd jokes.
Yeah.
Did I sound enthusiastic in that?
A little.
Okay, great.
Let's see. And real quick, for the celebration, if you're around on Saturday, our saving throw folks might want to know that Amy Vorpal is DMing an adventure called The Slapstick Hunt, a silly chase with folks from the guild.
That's awesome.
So, yeah, should be fun. Otherwise, there's tons of stuff to check out. DM roundtables, previews for Dragons. There's an entire session just on how to play draconic heroes and villains.
Oh, wow.
If you've got Fizban's Treasury ready to go, then that might be the panel for you.
Nope. Yeah. And folks, if you're out there, if you're friends of Amy Vorpal, we had her on last week. Check it out on YouTube. It was fantastic. Yeah. It was a really fun interview. She was a ton of fun.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think that does it for the news. Should we jump into this this main project of ours?
Whomp. Yes, indeed.
Ooh, all right. Oh my gosh. So we have an adventure yet to be named. Step
dun,
one.
Dun, dun.
Wait, step one. Right adventure. All right, here we are.
There we go.
So, you know, normally what we do is we do it a little more off the wall, where it's very system agnostic. But I'm thinking today what we're going to do is we're going to write a D&D adventure for levels, I don't know, for level, what's a fun level to write for? 10.
A roll a d20. Let's find out. Okay. Oh, great. 10.
I picked level 10. Right. Randomly level 10. So, excellent. All right. And this is where to chat. You folks totally join in. We have nothing on the page, so we need your help. Anything you put in chat could end up on this adventure, so we don't know what this adventure is. We don't know where we're going. We don't know what the goal is. All we know is it's D&D adventure for 10th level adventurers, and that it starts... stars in, oh, that's the problem, in the kitchen
right
of the Exploration Society.
That's right. Saving Throws headquarters right here.
Chef Alberti sending the adventurers somewhere.
Right.
Or something. It could be anything. It doesn't even need to be like sending them somewhere. It's just, it starts in the kitchen because that's where our adventures start. So, chat, Sean, Teos, anybody. All right, there we go. We already got someone. NPC, druid who uses cider-based magic. That is a good note to start with. So this is all we got. You know, we do know there is a druid who uses cider-based magic. So this is your prompt. How would you guys start? This is all you have.
Yeah, so I like this kind of thing because, and this is something that happens on your cooking adventures, there's always the need for ingredients, which is always super fun.
Yeah. Yeah, I like milk runs. I've always loved milk runs since Shadow Run, so, you know, all of these feel like milk runs to me.
How about we twist it and say that we got the ingredient, which was a cider that was going to go into it, but it was somehow spoiled, or perhaps magically tainted.
Yeah.
Which this druid would never, ever have allowed.
Yeah.
So what's up with that? Why did this happen? Is there something wrong with the druid?
Yeah. Perfect.
Oh, yeah. I like it.
All right. So our PCs, they're going to be trying to investigate why this druid would have allowed that to happen. Let's see here. So
the question is, did folks already suffer from this magic, or has it not been used yet? What's?
Oh yeah. Here, okay. let's take a step back. What is the magic, right?
Yeah. Right. And if you want to include a timer-based adventure, they should, you know, the people have already partaken of this and now they are cursed or diseased or something. So you only have X amount of time to figure out what's going on.
So 24 hours.
So, you know, here's the thing. Every good chef will taste the food as they're going through it and getting it prepared for their guests to ensure that everything is okay. The ill magic sadly affected our chef.
Yeah. Oh, that's a very good reason why we need to get on it right now.
He looks human and doesn't like it.
So maybe it's like reverse wild shape. Like you're not changing into beasts. Beasts are changing into people or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
So here's a question about here's a question about starting an adventure.
Yeah.
It's always best to start with some action rather than a big long exposition.
Yeah.
So are the characters there when this is happening? And if so, what do they have to do right off the bat to help alleviate the current situation?
Yeah.
So are they sitting at a table and all of a sudden everyone around them starts acting strangely, attacking each other, or some other challenge that the characters have to overcome?
Yeah, let's go opening scene.
Yeah, and a strong start doesn't have to be combat necessarily. Like, just seeing the chef transform is a great way to get people engaged, because you must do something about what happened, right? You must react, right? And that's always
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The PCs are in the kitchen. It is their turn to help the chef. And as he is tasting ingredients, tasting the cider, he drops to the ground.
Oh, so this is still a backstage thing. We're not out in front of the whole society or anything.
Okay. We could do that, but I was assuming that it would affect Chef Alberti first, and that, you know, if the PCs were there, then it becomes a mess in the kitchen to try to figure out what's going on.
So that could be a fun choice. So maybe you know that there is this, as was mentioned in chat, this annual banquet is going to happen. So now you can choose whether you want to go directly to try to resolve the issues or try to stop the banquet from moving forward or intercept the supplies or something like that.
Yeah.
A good bit of suspense can be had by having the characters all in the kitchen at the start, see this happen to the chef.
Oh, and he drops.
And then a minute later, they start hearing noises out in the main banquet hall. Because so they sort of know what they're going to be seeing when they open the door, but you get to describe it, and it ramps up the sort of dread of what they're going to be seeing.
Wow. I like that. So does this mean that, you know, we see what's going on, we get to investigate, we see some symptoms, maybe we're figuring out what's going on. But it sounds like we're going to get this specific mission, right? Save the chef, maybe from one Domwell Zookington, is the leader of the Exploration Society, joining in for a guest role, just kind of shaking us and going, you've got to save him. You've got to do it.
Yeah. then
depending whether you want to make this kind of clear or not, you could either have it to where they know what has happened and must act on it, or you could also have that here you have this uncommunicative chef who doesn't know how to speak human speak because it's all weird now, and you have to figure out what happened and do you have to discern that it's the cider, or do you already know it's the cider? Like, that's a choice we could go with.
I love that. Yeah, there's a little bit of a mystery there, right? Let's see. So before we even get to here, what we do is, so now in the scene, now the PCs get to react.
Right.
The chef is on the floor, and there is a commotion. Yeah. Out in the dining hall. Boom. All right. So, how do the PCs figure out what's going on? What are some ways? Is it Alex Flagg who does the three clues? So, you know, I like the three clues. Mm-hmm. You know, three potential clues all lead you there in different directions, different paths. Let's see here. I believe newbie DMs. structure too. So, you know, but of course you guys also have your own style. So let's see. How do they find out? Is the cider bottle on the floor? Is it on the table? Is it cider already mixed into something that he's eating? And then they have to figure out which ingredient it was?
I mean, we have an opportunity to not make this too easy because we said this adventure was for 10th level characters. So absolutely, we're looking at clerics who can cast contact other plane, right?
Yeah.
we could leave this as kind of a mystery, like some guidance. You can tell that it's a food thing, but you know, I need to use I need to speak telepathically to the chef to figure out, you know, what they're feeling because they can't really communicate to us otherwise.
Yeah.
You know, something like that.
And one thing you could do is you could have a mass, along those lines, you could have a mass of ingredients, right? Lots of options for what it could be. And worst case, your control valve can be that when Domwell Zookington comes in, they could have some clues that help you right the ship. So that prevents you from going too off the rails. But that could allow the characters to do their use their ingenuity and creativity and abilities to do whatever they need to do. Yeah. Maybe it's telepathy, something that's simple. Maybe it's sort of divination, but
because they've got a lot. So, you know, maybe the mystery of this is not what happened. Maybe that's something we expect the PCs with their abilities can do relatively quickly. Maybe the mystery part is like, where do we need to go now?
Yeah.
Like, where is this druid? How do we find them? I'm not sure.
Skills and succeed. Mm-hmm. So if you have something like, you know, a list of ingredients, and then you can deduce sort of what's been added, what hasn't, so you can narrow it down. Like, that's all fun, right? Like, even if it's 10th level, I think that sort of engagement can be fun.
Right. A puzzle?
Right. Let's see here. Like, what are, you know, chef feet, right? These things could give bonuses. Cooking skill, chef feet. Let's see here. Herbalism. Healing.
And yeah, if you wanted combat, though, I think with what we've got going on in the other room, there's probably plenty enough to go on. But you could also add something here, depending on what we want the cider to be doing. But...
Right. Yeah. I mean, you know, maybe it affects people. Let's see. So it affects. Let's go.
Here's something. If for example, it makes people attack each other.
Yeah.
Here, the characters are now rushing into the main dining hall, and they can't just fireball everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So they need to find a way to deal with this problem that they can't hit with a sword or blow up with a spell. They could use sleep. They could use those spells that they might not normally use at 10th level.
Oh, and that's fun, right? Yeah.
To diffuse the situation without causing harm.
Calm emotions, things like that.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, the bard could have a field day here.
Sure. One thing you could do is you could perhaps keep them, you know, vulnerable in that they have the statistics of NPCs, though some of them could be stronger. But you could also perhaps, maybe there's some really strange element that's going on that's very druidic that could be far more powerful. So it'd be fun to imagine an NPC that can, you know, breathe fire or kind of do like shillelagh or suddenly like huge claws or something, but still is quite vulnerable, but it's a threat to the other people. So it's more about the timing of it, right? Save everybody and stop this rather than defeat.
Yeah. You know, it could be something as simple as someone sprinkled some of the cider on their salad and, you know, or something, and then it's a giant plant creature, right?
But I really like the idea that, you know, we are going to be using Entangle to slow people down. We want to build walls to keep them separated, you know, more than just.
Yeah, and that could even be like a terrain situation, right? So it's less spell than it is more like terrain effect where these things are happening from. Yeah, maybe the cider sprinkled on the salads. I love that. Mm-hmm. It's all coming together. It'd be like druid chaos, right? It's just,
It's chaos love zones.
Especially when they overlap.
Let's add auras. Auras and zones. Wonderful.
So and here's another thing. Is part of the reason the folks are attacking each other is they are all changed to different ancestries, right? Mm. Yeah, right. So you know, the human, some of the humans shift to Dragonborn, and some of the, you know, Goliaths all of a sudden halflings, and they're just infuriated by these changes, and that's part of what's driving them, I think.
Oh, I like that. Yeah. Are we? Let's see. What's a good easy way to do that? Roll on the reincarnation table.
Well, I mean, you know, yeah. I like, if a PC does it, I say, yeah, roll on the reincarnation table. For NPCs, mm-hmm. it doesn't matter. Right. We just say there's X amount of Dragonborn and halflings and one giant plant creature.
I think it's worth putting a pin on this for later, that with this much transformation going on, transforming the PCs at some point later is a great concept, right? To force that exact same, you've got to play as something else, is super neat.
I love it. Boom. I like that. In here, let's go ahead and stop that. Boom. Let's remember that for later.
All right. Oh, now I'm seeing, especially if you can somehow put this cider on a salad, like maybe it's infused in the air. You walk into a chamber at some point, you're like, oh no. And that's,
yeah.
Do you smell that cider? And then
wow. Yeah. In my brain, it was like you step through the cider waterfall into the cave beyond. Yeah. But
that works too.
Oh man. All right. So, so then after the PCs, let's see here. After the PCs calm the chaos, then Dom Zookington appears to send the PCs to try to fix this problem. May have some additional information to help the PCs sort the problem out. And I think that leads us to where do they go now?
Yes, yeah, so I think it's the idea of, is it a supplier of the cider? Is it an ingredient that was in, or do we have to go to see the druid? I guess we probably want to go see the druid.
Probably want to go see the druid. So yeah, the PCs are sent to go see the druid.
Here's where you can do something where if the idea is to reward or give consequences for success or failure, and not just combat, but in investigation.
Yeah.
So if they are able to investigate properly, they know to go right to the druid. If they cannot investigate properly, they only know that all the ingredients came from this merchant.
Okay.
So they're that now they go to the merchant. Doesn't even have to be anything but a role-playing encounter. But then because they went there first, in any encounters thereafter, things are a little tougher.
Yeah.
More monsters, harder DCs. Yeah. Make those consequences or rewards for doing it quickly, put them in place.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I like using disadvantage on things. So, you know, like I love disadvantage on a save against a cider or the changing effects, mm-hmm. right? I think that's yep. good. Mm-hmm. I like, you know, maybe a couple DCs are higher. Mm-hmm. And there is a few more enemies because the PC's a waste of time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I like that.
Cool. There are a couple of things we could do with time here. So one is that this may not be the only event to which this cider was sent.
Oh, yeah.
True. Yeah. So we haven't figured out the motive of this druid yet. Yeah.
Yeah. Here, let's
so and then that might be something you can learn at various levels. Like you could learn it from the merchant or from the druid, or maybe even if you investigate carefully here, you would know that this was sent to various locations.
Yeah. Right. It would be nice if there was a plus side to needing to go talk to this merchant, right? It's not all negatives, but like you get to the merchant and the merchant is scared of this druid. You know, they give you some hints that this is not going to be a simple exchange of thoughts later on.
That's a great idea, because if you set the druid as being like, this is the druid of winter and decay or something like that, and they can help you sometimes, but other times they're, you know, a bane and they dislike interlopers, right? That sort of thing. That can always be fun.
The FDA suggests not buying your apples from the druid of winter and decay. Just in general.
Just in general.
Just a small thing.
Right. Yeah. But I like the idea that potentially, if we have this event and that's all the investigating we do, there could be a mistake, right? There could be an ingredient that went in and you're like, that's the wrong one. I wonder if the druid knows this is happening or if this is happening on, right? We're just not sure. But yeah, you talk to the merchant, you go somewhere else and you're like, oh no, this is a pattern. This is very bad.
Yeah, and maybe normally through a long-standing agreement, the druid comes to to the merchant or to some place, but now you've got to go to them, and that's dangerous, right? Because the whole 10th level characters thing, they live in a place that's inhospitable to most people.
Right,
it's big threats.
Oh, Winter and Decay make that so inhospitable.
I mean, it's raining here right now, so.
Yeah. Oh, congrats.
Yay, rain. Yes. So I add a little something to that. So normally the druid delivers the cider on the back of a mammoth, but now the PCs have to go there. Because I feel like a crusty, gross druid on top of a mammoth that has matted hair is a good image of them coming into town, and they're just cranky. But the only time you see them smile is whenever they hand over the cider. And because that's the only thing they truly love.
Wow.
All right. So it looks like the next chunk is going to be the travel to the druid.
The travel and the transformation.
Yeah. So
wouldn't want to transform them too late because you want them to get used to this. And I see this note in the chat about, a body transference effect. So the party ends up running other characters.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'd want to make new characters for everyone, but I'd love to give them a template of some kind. Your abilities change in this way. And now you're a demon rabbit. And also you can, jump 30 feet if you want to, or something else in there.
Right.
Yeah. And one thing that can also happen, though it's a little riskier design wise, usually people at the table pick a mix of characters, right? Like you're not going to have everybody be a half elf. So usually it'll be wild. And if we bank on that, one thing you could do is you swap.
Yeah.
So that's one from a role playing perspective, right? If you have like the halfling and Goliath and you choose to swap them, then that's can kind of be neat, but you're taking some risk with that design that maybe somehow they really are an all halfling party. So maybe you need a plan B because it can happen. But I do like that kind of swapping because it forces a change, a very mental change of like, I was leaning into this for my role playing, but now I've got to do what they were doing. And that can be fun.
Right.
Yeah.
I like that one. That one also, I mean, as long as the table is cool with that, that could be really, really fun. Some of my kids would get so frustrated at having to, I have to play. No, I don't want to be that character.
And we could have two options, right? If the table is cool with it, you can swap characters.
That is very fun. I enjoy that. Because you get to play them a little bit off.
You can just have them take a template or change their race.
Yeah. And one thing you can do
another question, both in one question is this, what's the change? The second question for you as a designer is, when is the change?
Yes.
Do you want to do it very early while they're traveling to give the table lots of time to role play as this other, or do you want it to be something that happens like in the heat of battle? So it's there's not as much role playing involved, but it sort of changes the way this combat's going to take place. And both could be fun depending on the party that you're running for. So it's something to keep in mind for a designer.
Yeah. Well, and I'm thinking maybe they change the first time when they enter the realm. But, seeing as I am a millennial, I ask, why not both? They get, one of the final combat powers, whoever they're fighting, is to transform the PCs. and maybe with just a recharge, right? On a recharge. And just,
one everybody rotate.
Why not, right? It can either, once again, cool, swap characters. Iffy, we'll just change your races around, something like that. Mm-hmm. And, it might develop some interesting tactics whenever it's, you're rolling on a resurrection table to see what your next race would be.
And if we went on the sort of template angle, you know, that's where it can be really great to have some nice handouts.
Yes, mm-hmm. I love handouts.
Yeah, and you could do things that capture the essence of it. Like, you know, if you give somebody the lucky feat for becoming a halfling, mm-hmm. or the lucky power, right, that they have to reroll a one, you know, you could do a couple of those, like one for each of those. So now it's also fun. Mm-hmm. But then maybe you give them some role-playing instructions that they have to lean into, like things they hate, right?
Yeah. Because
there's that whole aggression angle to it. So maybe a situation where they must do a thing or are encouraged to do a thing, right? If you don't do this thing, you get disadvantaged or something. And that can be a lot of fun to be an agent of role-playing in that whole scene.
Yeah. I like that a lot. Just because it will shake it up in not just a combat sense, you know, or a... you know, body transference, but I love the idea that people need to role play a little bit differently. You know, if I swap to a new character, I would try to have a lot of fun with it just so that, you know, that player is like, that's not what my character would do. And I'm like, but it's me. It's where I'm not you. That could be a lot. That sounds great. But it's the new role playing ideas. I'm digging that.
Ooh.
Yeah. All right. We have some good comments from chat. So.
Oh, we really do.
What I'm gonna do is I'm gonna roll back a little bit and I'm gonna bring up some of these that I like. I like this one from Zanyaz. I'm gonna go ahead and pop it up on the screen again. I want to roll back to here in the area where they're investigating. Let's see here. Yes. Tasting. I think tasting. maybe we make a very small, we make a small table for if the PCs taste, like take a small taste of the silence.
This is very good. Because I didn't think about this at the time, but of course I would do this. Of course I would try some of the cider to see what happens.
Yeah, right.
Random effects, I'm in.
Like, and most of the effects are good. Most of the effects are positive, and maybe it's like, you know, 1x per, you know, day, since it's only 24 hours, you get a random racial trait, so like lucky, night vision, you know, that type of stuff.
Yeah, hellish rebuke of a tiefling, right? Like,
right, fun. yeah mm-hmm. things like that. I like that.
And you grow a tail. Yeah,
right.
Fun.
And then something bad, like I don't know, maybe you pick up an aquatic elf's gills, right? And you have to keep them moist.
Oh,
right.
What's the grung one? You have to like immerse your head in a bucket of water once for an hour a day or something.
Right. Yeah. Grung thing. Yeah. Yeah. Little things like that. That's great. If they do some sipping, I think that's pretty lovely.
That's very good.
Boom, boom, boom. The Druid of Winter and Decay has a grudge against the Exploration Society because something about its activity over the past year has affected his supply chain or business.
Oh my gosh.
He would.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because the chef keeps sending people out after ingredients. It's ridiculous. Druid is really furious.
The Druid could even dislike this longstanding deal to supply these ingredients. And resents them, and so you have all these reasons you think that the Druid could be against you, and maybe they are, maybe they aren't. We can decide that, but
yeah, I love it. And then I feel like ultimately, this is from Ard Stewardine. I feel like ultimately they will need one of the original apples to reverse the effect, mm-hmm. and I love this. It feels like, you know, at the end there's like maybe a tree in a grove with an opening in a grove and the light shining on it and they have to get to it. But then the final conflict is right there, right? With whatever it is.
I see treants hurling exploding apples.
Oh,
I'm just going to write that down because that's awesome.
Yeah.
Treant hurling exploding apples. Yeah, because, this is, and the treants like the druid for some weird reason, but no one else. So no one else is allowed to get to those apples.
Yeah.
All right.
Wow.
Okay, so now they're traveling to the druid.
Yeah. So what do we want to encounter on the way there?
angry drunk hornets. All right.
What? Oh, hey.
Yeah. All right. So
that was my nickname in college.
That joke never gets old.
It doesn't.
It's very responsible.
Look, you have a bunch of hornets in your dorm room one time.
I'm old. There's no videotape. I'm not worried.
All right. They enter. All right. So, you know, we'll say our good leader, Dom Zuckington, he opens a portal. A portal.
Like you
portals
do.
Are fun. Oh, wait. No, wait. They're traveling. So,
yeah, because they're also high level, so they may have ways they want to travel.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I love this. So, so they know they have to travel to the Druid's realm. How they get there, or to the merchant, how they get there is their own problem.
Right.
Give them a simple map.
That's fine. And we'll say, you know, by foot, the area is 1 day away. So they have to figure out a different way of getting there, which means, you know, by horse. Horses, whatever, would be a quarter of that, I think. Something like that. Right.
So we get into those travel, overland travel rules are...
Right.
Yeah, and this is why I would just assume, kind of go ahead and go, oh, by the way, these are the ones that we will be using, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah, and the timing can be tweaked depending on how much time you want them to have to resolve the issue and save the other towns that have this wider cider consumption coming up.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, well, this is an area for some of our time constraints, right? Mm-hmm. We'll figure that out. Steal a little time from them, make them rush a little bit more. Then they near the realm. We're going to call it a realm because I think it's bigger than just a grove. Like, it's an entire forest, that forest swampy, okay. Cold, gross tar pit area that he kind of command, or they command. They near the realm. I think this is the appropriate time we could send some weird monsters at them.
I love the hornets. There should be like wyvern-sized hornets.
Yeah.
That have also been changed by this cider.
Wyvern.
Oh my gosh.
Angry hornets. I love it.
When they lift off right from there. The trees. Oh geez. I want leaves to fall as the trees bounce as they fly up in the air. Oh yeah.
Yes. Yeah, you know, the sound of a helicopter.
Oh, geez, yeah.
When they approach.
Yeah.
That's kind of cool, just having these deafening hornets. That's just the way it is. They're that loud.
Yeah.
And you can just use the wyvern stat block because they've got the poison stinger already.
Yeah, I love it.
Oh, yeah.
So you could just add, like, a drone. Just add some sort of drone effect that... frightens or something, and you've got your hornets.
Frightens.
I appreciate that, Justin.
Frightens and that. Maybe deafens too, right?
Yes,
they're high level PCs.
Oh yes, this. Sorry, we need ornithopter.
Ornithopter, right?
This can mess up your concentration checks, which can be a good challenge.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Love it. I like that. What is this helicopter? We have sent the adventurers all kinds of ways that they probably know what helicopters are. But we're going to go with an ornithopter.
Yeah.
Here's one. Along the way, they find a party of rogues who would usually be robbing the supply chain. But these rogues are making a hastily retreat from the druid. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They near the realm.
That is not bad.
They see.
Yep, that's a great idea. And if there's any magical effects that the characters are going to come up against, it has happened to the rogues. Yeah.
Yeah. I want to put that after the murder hornets.
Yeah. Yeah.
They see a group of rogues running from the realm of the druid. You know, and they all look strange, right? They all look strange in that like one has a single wing. They are dragging one on a what's those things where you drag people who are injured? Like not a stretcher, but a stretcher. We'll just call it a stretcher.
Yeah.
Dragging on a stretcher.
Sledge.
Who has a
it begins with P, I think.
Yeah. Mermaid tail, you know, things like that, right? Like they just don't look right. There we go. So there we go. You know, and
I was wrong.
I think that would be this will be a fun fight, and that would be a very interesting encounter, right? Where they pass, and then maybe they even warn the PCs to not go in there. It's weird.
I mean, it's a good time to get some good information about what the druid is like today, which may be different than what we've learned anywhere else.
Yeah. You know, so they have some information on the druid, but it is told through the lens of fear. So whenever, you know, the idea is like, you know, maybe they saw the druid, but you know, sure, maybe in real life he's a 5'10", you know, scrawny white guy, but they're like, no, the druid, 20 feet tall, towering over trees, hurling tar balls at us as we were trying, right? You know, slightly exaggerating because everything's bigger, huh?
Mm-hmm. Could be a giant, the druid.
Oh, could be a giant, right?
You have a mammoth. Yeah. I mean, that's a perfect mount for a giant.
So. Sure. Yeah,
sure.
Oh, I love it.
I like these rogues as total liars.
Huh?
Yeah, just the whole time.
Yeah. Did we forget to mention that it was a giant?
Yeah. Yeah, no one mentions it until now. Right. Right. So in one hand, they're like, the PCs get to go, well, these people just said it's a giant, but no one said anything about a giant before.
It's a giant that just casts Reduce whenever it wants to. They want to go sell their cider.
Yeah. What else could they want?
I love
to... You know, rodents.
I mean, I think these rogues should be like, we didn't steal anything. We would never steal anything. We would never do anything bad. We weren't caught trying to take those apples. You know, I feel like we should definitely not trust this narrator at all.
No. They are not trusted narrators. You may be able to get a little bit of information out of them, but it's going to be told through a rogue's mouth, peppered with a lot of fear.
Going off your idea of rodents of unusual size, so maybe it's not a fire swamp, but it's maybe it's a forest where things are decaying and horrible gases are released, and maybe those things are used with the cider, right? So they warn you that you know this swamp, the things are decaying and it's noxious, and that's where you can then. It gives them a clue as to what's going to happen later, right?
And this, I like this because now, you know, when we get to it, it is going to be this gas bubbling up from the ground that's going to start this transformation, and not just cider raining from the skies.
Yeah, no, I love it.
I like it. That makes a ton of sense.
Oh man! Good. All right. Yeah. So now, they've seen the horrible effects. They have investigated. They have made their way to the druid's realm. On the way, they fought some hornets that were very big. And they ran into some rogues, and now they're getting into the actual... They enter the realm. Let's go ahead and... I should have been doing this the whole time, but that's okay. They enter the realm. Boom. All right. So, We already kind of described the dank, dark forest filled with decay. But what are some other things? Like, you know, I like brainstorming weird visuals that we can use potentially in box text, right? So, you know, the path they follow, you know, the ground is sticky.
Rotted leaves.
What was that?
Rotted leaves.
And rotted leaves everywhere.
Yeah.
And if they go off trail, it is just muck. Muck that goes to their knees.
I like the idea that this little forest here has a lot of wards, you know, potentially like, you know, antlers tied to things, whatever else posted around, but they're all facing inward. They're not stopping you like, you know, they're protecting everyone else from what's at the center of this forest.
Yeah. Weird antlers. Tied to trees. The PCs.
Yeah, it's like the people who live nearby have set up.
The PCs can investigate. They notice that they all point inward, and that's the big clue that they will get from those. I like that. All right. So now they're in the realm. Of course, they're going to get hit by gas. So that's going to be one of the first things that has to happen, right?
With all this muck, you know, that could always be an opportunity to throw in some sort of oozy, muddy, elementally type thing.
Yes.
Which, if you want to make the traversing dangerous, right, then that could be where I would imagine a scene where you're trying to go through an area and find this path. Like, it's great. Like, we've already established the trail is important. If you go off, it's unsafe.
Yeah.
Then you move a little further, and now it's like you can't tell where the trail went. And then how you deal with it will dictate maybe how the encounter plays out, because they might do something like fly over it or that, you know, something like that. But maybe there's a combination of like vines and mud golem-y type things.
Yeah.
So you can hit them either way. It'd be a lot of fun.
Rancid cider elemental.
Yeah.
I like that.
I think the video game Pitfall would have been better with mud golems involved. Yeah, so absolutely. I'm kind of liking this.
I love it. I think, you know, it's something they can void, right? Like on, because they're big, powerful PCs. So let's let them use their powers, right? So if they fly, it is only the vine encounter.
I would give the vine creatures is something to shove them into the mud, or either drag them into the mud or knock them back, right? So
yeah,
you can have your encounter either way.
Mud, knock around.
Right, like you get up over the canopy, you look down, and there you can see like this dome of like branches just like thickly tied together in the center. You can't get in there. Mm-hmm. You head back down in the trees, and they just pull you. You know, once you get within like, I don't know, 50 feet maybe.
Yeah.
All right.
And one thing you can do, if you think the party's at this level, because 10th level is sort of on the edge, right? But if you think that they're going to do something like they're going to bypass all this stuff, which I wouldn't quite expect at 10th, but if you needed to, one thing you can do for these kinds of things is to create something that if they're flying over, they would see. So we could have like an old vine-covered idol or something like that, something that would bring them down here to interact with it if you're worried about that. But if you think they're just going to be traversing, then you're good, right?
Yeah.
And when you do that, also make it worth their while for going down.
Oh, yeah.
Whether it be information or right.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, and that's actually a good idea. What would we want to reward? What was the reward for the vine encounter? We didn't really have one for the hornets, you know, because hornets don't carry loot. And hornets are just jerks, so they don't carry it. With the vine encounter, what kind of loot could they get?
I mean, this is a great place to have old skeletons buried in the muck and stuff like that that they could find. There's a lot of stuff.
But also, it might be nice to start cluing the party into some of the reasons. So if it was like an idol that's covered in vines, if it you know, references something that's been some ancient evil or something that the druid worships or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
it's nice to start giving an indication to where the players have some ideas of maybe this is what's going on.
Right.
Yeah.
And the first part of an antidote for whatever's happening back at the dining hall could be here as well.
Oh yeah. No, I think
you need to collect three ingredients to make the antidote. And here's the mushrooms growing on the idol, or the moss growing on the idol.
Oh, I love this.
Ooh, I like that.
Perfectly, perfectly preserved corpses. I like corpses with clues and loot. So clues, they find something related to the cure, and maybe some notes in a bag. And then as far as loot, what's something that would be useful against these evil treants that we wouldn't normally think of? Because unlike Gygax, I feel like it's fun to give adventurers the items to solve the problem before the problem.
So it's not the dragon with the dragon slayer sword in their hoard after you don't need it. Yeah.
Yeah. I like the wooden cart covered with
guilty.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we could totally add that cart there too. Yeah. There is. Mm-hmm. Ooh, wait. There is a cart filled with ingredients. But these are the untainted ciders.
Right, is this like the rogues' cart? You know, they kind of left it here as they fled.
Oh yeah, yeah,
we
yeah.
Just now recovered
yeah.
it.
That's a good way to tie it all together. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. This is the rogues' cart.
Yeah, and maybe what was I going to say? The you could either point to, so if you had travelers who they preserve corpses, you know, one possibility is they came here. Maybe the druid experimented on their village first, and they've come here seeking the cure, which is either some of the ingredients or the apples or something, you know, they some knowledge of that, right? So you can see they failed in their attempt to get this thing, and now you know one of the things.
Let's see. I'm trying to think about treasure that we could drop that could be useful. I mean, I'm seeing we're having this treant throwing some exploding apples, which I like. We're having this druid of decay, which envisioning spore-like potentially. Is that what we're talking about with decay? Or some sort of quick rotting ability? I'm not sure.
I do like both of these. The treants might not like magical or artificial or artificer-made termites. The treants may be vulnerable to hornet poison. Or maybe it's a net, a weird net to catch the apples.
That's cool.
Yeah, they can. I can see that being in that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Golden sickle or something like that.
A magical net and spear.
That reminds me, there's one of the early Fifth Ed adventures has an axe that's good for cutting down trees, right? I've handed that one out to kids before. You know, that sort of thing would be perfect right here.
Reflect apples. Yeah, let's do a magical net and axe.
Yeah. Oh gosh, I'm gonna try and find that one.
Axe
or a scythe or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you were saying sickle. I like that a lot. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, let's do that. Treants. On here, and we're getting corrupted. Treants. Ah, cool.
Rough, so glad you're typing.
Yeah, I'm used to everyone saying how bad my spelling is. Boom.
We have technology. Nice. I like this.
Oh, that's right. It's from Lost Mine of Phandelver. The axe called Hugh that does maximum damage when you hit a plant or an object made of wood.
That's cool. Yeah.
All sort right. of deals always fun. Ooh, corrupted treants. I love that.
Right, you know, because it's a little more focused, right, to the adventure. which I you know, if I have a bunch of weird magic items that are were only useful in one adventure, that's just stories for my character to tell later on. So I love those types of things.
Yep.
All right, so so they've made it through to this idol. They've dealt with the vines and the muck and the mud monsters. They've uncovered these clues. I think our next beat is the encounter with the druid, right?
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Yeah, I was just looking up tree blights. They are a CR7 if we're talking about corrupted tree, and so we could certainly make one of those much more dangerous,
yeah,
fitting a level 10 party. Or we could go straight for it and take a treant.
yeah. I like taking a treant and just, well, and just messing with it. Yeah, we'll just mess with
make
the treant.
Make it dark.
Mess with the treant. And really, it won't take too much.
Shambling mounds are always an option.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, and that's, you know, let's toss that in here, too.
Treants are great.
I like treants.
What I love about all the plant stuff is it tends to be synergistic with what the druids are doing, which is always great.
Right. Mm-hmm. So the encounter with the druid, do they encounter the druid in the grove with the treants, or do they encounter the druid before that? Thinking about our story beats here. So let's go back. So here we go. Here's the very beginning. We'll just underline that so I keep track. So there's the very beginning. This is that whole opening scene. Boom. There we go. We'll underline that too. Opening scene. Then they go on their adventure, or they clear into chaos, and then they go on their adventure to go either find the druid, find the merchant. Once they do one of those, they travel to the druid. This is going to be our next bit, right? And this is where they run into the hornets. This is where they run into the rogues, which gives more information. They enter the realm, go through the dark forest filled with decay. If they fly or do skill checks, however, they end up at this vine-covered idol where they fight the vine golems as well as like mud stuff, and then they get some more clues. They get the magical net and sickle, so that they maybe they don't know why they have it yet, but it'll come together as they get to the final encounter. But first, is the encounter with the druid the final encounter, or is something else going on?
There's an interesting thought in the chat here, which I just want to bring up right here at the end.
Yeah.
About the druid. Like, we've been talking about this, like, the druid is the villain, but we also, I think, mentioned a strange, you know, vine-covered idol that might have been here for a very long time. Like, maybe it is, like, the evil force that has been infused in this tree. The tree is, like, the villain, if we wanted to. And so, potentially, we could, like, convince the druid or somehow charm them to not be part of the combat, but we still have this deadly demonic somehow, you know, or otherwise evil tree.
Yeah, I think that's
it's
a great
come,
idea.
Yeah, we gotta get those apples. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea and gives the characters the chance to, if they foolishly rush in and just attack the druid right away, they make an enemy. If they take the time to talk to, you know, him or her, and they realize that, oh, this druid, even though they're not necessarily a great social person, not friendly, they had no idea what was happening here. It was actually this treant that gives the apples that tricked the druid into just giving them away without checking.
I'm now like envisioning this epilogue moment where we take the druid to a spa day. just clean off some of that grime later on, and
yeah,
they join the society. Who knows?
exactly. Now they have two options. They can try to social it. Say, hey, by the way, do you realize, like, do you realize what you're doing? And you know, and
deliver.
I like skill challenges, so.
We have our first angry orchard joke, so that was good.
Oh man,
and we could go back to when you see that idol. There may be some more clues there that allow you to learn that the druid recently uncovered this idol.
Okay.
In fact, maybe the rogues, since we put their cart there, maybe the rogues happened upon the druid clearing that idol.
Okay, yeah.
I like that.
I love it. Yeah.
And they've been wandering confused for, you know, weeks. So maybe they're days or whatever. And so they, you know, it's been some time, and the players can get a sense of maybe this idol had some magic within it or something like that. And something was released from this idol.
I just did an adventure with gnolls and read up in all the lore for Involos about them, which was pretty incredible. So now I'm trying to dig into which demon lord might be responsible for this sort of thing.
Right. You know who?
Is it the Lady of Rotten Decay, the Demon Queen of Fungi?
Potentially. Yeah. You know,
I don't know.
Right. Yeah. Some clues show that the druid was investigating the idol. Maybe the druid doesn't know what the idol is. Like, it showed up all of a sudden. In his grove, already covered with all these vines.
One way you could give a hint of this is it could be possible the characters learned what the druid is. Like, maybe the druid is some particular race and you show up and they're a different one.
Oh.
Which tips you off the fact that they've been affected by this too.
Right. Now they're a giant.
Now they're a giant, right? Early on, it was clear that
gnome.
They were a gnome.
There you go.
Love gnomish druids. And now they are a giant. And this could be one of the clues is a mammoth sized saddle built for a gnome. Right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Can't use that.
All right. Go ahead.
I was just to say that there is I was looking at D&D Beyond at monsters here, and there is a essentially spellcasting treant that appears in Storm King's Thunder, CR9.
Oh, that's perfect.
And that's kind of a fun concept for an end monster.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's not OGL.
Yeah, there's no plants above CR9 in most sources unless you go third party.
Yeah, so this is the perfect opportunity to throw all the plants at your PCs.
This is true.
Yeah.
Cool.
I've been doing a little bit of research, and Zugit Moy is feeling like a serious, oh my gosh. Mm-hmm. I need to read more about Demon Lords. They're fantastic.
Yeah.
Oh, she's great, yeah.
But seems like the perfect force for kind of this narrative, even if, you know, she's not going to show up here.
I like it. Yeah, an idol to her could be great.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, and then the bonus here, if they do this, is that they know about the treants ahead of time and gives them the opportunity to prepare. Do they have that spell in 5th edition that they had in 4th edition where you could go into a zone for an hour and come out fully rested?
Sort of. There's something like that.
Yeah. Well, you know.
Well, there's the Healing Spring shenanigans that has Errata.
Yeah.
Sure.
The druid just cast a spell that gives the PCs a full rest. Boom. Done. Mm-hmm. Right?
Kind.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're a nice DM. I would never do that for you.
Oh, well, I mean, I know, but I maybe not a full rest. Maybe, I don't know. This was just the first thing to pop in my head, right? Like, then I don't feel so bad throwing, you know, 6 treants and 4 shambling mounds at the PCs or whatever, right?
Right. I mean, just if anyone is very injured, cast some cure wounds on them.
Yeah. The druid heals. We'll just say the druid heals the PCs. I think that's good. They get a short rest, and they get a short rest.
Mm-hmm. We don't really want the druid to heal this transformation at this moment, right?
No.
So druid, nothing's going on there.
Well, the druid's transformed. Right? He can't figure it out.
Yeah. Yeah. So, okay.
All right.
They'll have to work together.
All right. So, or they blindly rush into combat. So what happens here? Well, they don't have knowledge currently of the Treants. So what do they get if they blindly rush into combat?
Fistful of claws.
Whooped on.
Other than whooped on, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I say that you play out the battle with the druid, and then right as the battle is about to end, or even before it's going to end, the Treants come in.
Oh, yeah. I love
it. And so, you know, the punishment is you have two battles back-to-back without any rest.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sure. Quick transition.
Just as the PCs are about to defeat the druid, in comes the Treants.
Yeah.
I like that a lot. I love it. All right.
Yeah.
All right. So now I guess it's the Treant battle. One way or another, they're going to have to deal with these Treants to remove the corrupted one that is controlling all the others.
Mm-hmm.
Others.
I have to take my show on the road, but thank you all
for
having me
out. Oh, yeah.
Have a good time finishing this adventure. I can't wait to hear what y'all come up with.
Yeah, yeah. We're thank you so close. Much, Sean. Thanks for hanging
thank
out.
Thank you.
And take we'll care. See you next time.
See you next time. Bye-bye.
Yeah, we are. Excellent. I did get distracted. We are dangerously close to the end of our time. So, yeah. So let's
We finish. Were like, this will go short. It'll be.
Yeah.
Right.
All right.
Blazing. This adventure is great.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think one of the things that could happen is the tree with the perfect apple or whatever, that could be in this scene or it could be something that you can do after you have this fight. I don't know what you like better.
Yeah, the tree with the perfect apple, appears. It doesn't really matter, right? It's magic, right? It appears when the final corrupted Treant drops.
I like it.
And it just appears in the middle near them, right?
Near Maybe the it's pieces. Covered in vines and the vines wither away, revealing it. Mm-hmm. Like that.
Yeah, it is covered and vines and the vines wither away. I love it.
Nice.
Boom.
I like that because we could also have, you know, like some of the muck that we've got here starts drying up after this influence is gone. You know, maybe this isn't meant to be so swampy.
Yeah. Yeah. I love it. All right. Well, I do kind of think that's our adventure, right?
Awesome.
Head back to the chef, turn in the ingredients, create the antidote.
Yeah.
We get that moment where everything's back to normal. Right. And then someone proposes a toast and then everyone goes, wait, wait, wait. And then it cuts to black.
Yes. Oh man. All right.
Guys, I found some cider in the back.
Yeah. Oh. Everyone freezes with one hand forward. Yeah. I miss the 80s.
I mean, they knew how to start and end TV shows with beautiful
really
montages.
Oh, man. All right. Well, thanks, everyone, for helping us out. We do this every Sunday right here on Saving Throw, starting at 2 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, and we typically go till about 4. Come hang out with us. Teos, your partner ran away, but tell them a little bit about your show.
Just very quickly, you can find us at Mastering D&D on Twitter, and the podcast is Mastering Dungeons, so you can find it wherever good podcasts are found. You can find me at alphastream.org and also hanging out at the Saving Throw Network because it's so much fun.
Yeah, we have definitely seen you in the chat, and we've, of course, had you on the show. Rich, what do you have going on this week?
Ooh, oh gosh, I think it's a pretty sleepy week, honestly. The Academy is going strong. We're starting to gear up for season 2, which is coming in mid-October. But having a good time there. You can track me down on Twitter at @rmolina and see what's going on.
Cool. And I'm always on Twitch. I am DJ Pirate Rabbits here on Twitch. I stream my DJ streams every Wednesday night where we watch classic films while I play some sweet house tunes. And then on Sunday mornings, I do a little brunch set, usually about an hour, hour and a half, just kind of get your weekend finished up there. So once again, thank you so much, Teos, for joining us. Yeah. You know, Sean, thank you for joining us too, even though you had to leave a little early, but that's okay. And yeah, I think that's it. I think that's the show. So thank you so much, everyone. Have a wonderful Gen Con weekend out there. You guys are rad. And what is the... Oh, we did forget the most important
thing. Oh my
thing.
Gosh.
Adventure yet to be named. Oh, before we go...
I love that it's named after Discordia. That's so exciting. Gosh, what are we going to do?
Apples, poisoned apples, rotting vines.
Mm-hmm.
An apple a day.
Whose cider are you on?
Oh no, that's even better. Done.
I was trying to go with some mulled cider or something, but that's good. Whose cider are you on?
It's gonna be E, isn't it? Yeah. Boom. All right. And with that, thank you, audience. Thank you, Gen Con. Thank you, Saving Throw. And we will see you next time. And remember to keep your crock pots on simmer.